That's John Parr. St Elmo's Fire and Man in Motion. You're listening to Drive Time on Black Country Radio. It's now time to do another one of our occasional Q&A vaccine questionnaires sort of thing that we've done before. I've done about four of these before, and we're delighted to be joined by Black Country and West Birmingham Clinical Commissioning Group. And I've actually have one panellist on the line at the moment. We let a load of people in and then they disappear, but I'm joined on the line so far by Anna Blesser-Hassett, who's a public health representative from Sandwell MBC. Good evening, Anna.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And you?
Yeah, very well too.
Good. The joys of using Zoom is that if those of you listening are familiar with Zoom, then you have to let people into your waiting room. And I let a load of people into the waiting room and then they all disappeared. So I don't really quite know what's happened. So Anna, it could just be you and I this evening until the others rejoin.
We'll see what happens.
Now, the thing is, today is the day that the government have released the COVID vaccine for 12 to 15 year olds. Children at school. And what I don't understand to start with, we've had this pandemic, unfortunately, and it is a pandemic, at least now for 18 months. Why do you think it's taken the government, in your opinion, so long to actually get this up and running?
Basically, the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, the government committee that are advising on the vaccination program and its rollout. They've always had their priority groups. So I guess their approach was systematic, and the vaccination they wanted to give to people who are the most vulnerable to COVID at first. And of course, that included older people and people in care homes and healthcare workers and care home staff as well. And they made their way through those groups. And as they did that, I think they assessed the impact of vaccination as a tool in terms of ending and dealing with the pandemic. They've now been able to see the impact of the vaccination program in other age groups and to see that it has been successful in terms of reducing the impact of COVID, the risk of the severity of the disease for people. And during that time as well, we've been able to collect more evidence from other countries and from clinical trials to show that the vaccine is safe and effective for 12 to 15 year olds as well. And I think now they've assessed all of that and looking at the situation in the UK, they want to roll it out here as well for the 12 to 15-year-olds.
And that's the thing. I mean, it's all right. You know, these vaccines do not happen overnight, despite public perception, because these would have been worked on as soon as this pandemic was known. And, you know, it's not something that you can just do on the back of an envelope. And that's clearly why, as you say, it's taken so long. Now, I'm pleased to say that I'm now joined by Ruki Kallon. I hope I've pronounced that correctly, Ruki, who's the chief pharmacist. And I've also got Dr. Kieran Kennedy, who's a public health registrar and academic clinical fellow in public health. Good evening to all of you now.
Good evening.
Good evening, Clive.
Thank you very much for joining us. And I think I'm just missing one person who I think the joys of Zoom. There we go. Dr. Mayada Abu Afan has just joined us. She's head of adult and older people's public health. So we'll just come to her in a second. And I've also got Alicia Wakeman as well. Let's go on to these questions. If I'm a parent then, or I'm have legal responsibility for children, how will I know what vaccinations are going to be given? Because obviously this is being offered to between 12 and 15 year olds. Or is that just, is it just being rolled out generally, or is it specific to different areas? Dr. Kennedy, perhaps you could take that one, please.
Hi, great question. So for everyone in the 12 to 15 year old age group, they'll be getting the Pfizer vaccine. So this is a vaccine we've given to hundreds of millions of people now. We've seen that it's safe. We've seen that it's effective. And lots of young people have already had this vaccine. So personally, I was in the colleges talking to lots of young people, and they've all had the Pfizer vaccine themselves and had great experiences with them. With this age group, we're giving one vaccine. And basically, we've had a look at the data, and we've seen, particularly in younger people, they're having an even better protection from one vaccine than from the older age groups. So we're focusing on rolling out for all the 12 to 15-year-olds one dose of the Pfizer vaccine. There is a small caveat in that some children in this age group are considered clinically extremely vulnerable, so that these are children that might have a severe problem with their immune system. They're eligible for both the doses. They need this extra level of defense. Mm-hmm. But for the majority of children in the 12 to 15-year-old age group, we're focusing on rolling out this one dose of the Pfizer vaccine.
Right. But I mean, as you say, experience is key in the sense that that's the preferred one. If somebody says, well, I want my child to have, you know, AstraZeneca or something else, can they request an alternative, or is it the Pfizer or nothing?
So in this age group, we're giving out the Pfizer vaccine. So there's a few reasons for that. The first main reason is we've given millions of doses out. We've seen it's good. Very effective mm-hmm. at preventing infections, effective at preventing severe infections in the small proportion who do get the virus. And it's got a very good side effect profile, minimal side effects at all. When we do the research on all these vaccines, we look at the data, look to see what is going to be the most effective, what is going to be the most safe vaccine to use. And the evidence shows that the Pfizer vaccine in younger people is the preferred option. So that's why we're rolling ahead with this vaccine, and we think it's going to be a good vaccination experience.
Ruki Kalon, good evening to you. You're chief pharmacist. In your opinion, how will the vaccine be given to each child? Is it in exactly the same way as it happens with grown-ups?
It is indeed. It's actually very simple that we're utilising the regulatory approved route, which is an intramuscular injection, which is usually to the top part of the arm. We have started that rollout of the vaccination, and the children have been really exceptionally brilliant, actually tolerating it very well. Actually, almost a badge of honour that I've been vaccinated. So yes, absolutely in line with the adult setting. And we have, as Kieran has just pointed out, you know, millions and millions of doses of expertise on this, and without issue or concern raised by children, they're accepting it very well.
And if a child has some sort of needle phobia, is there an alternative method of administration? Does it have to be done intravenously?
So intramuscularly, at the moment, it's still an injectable form. There isn't another alternative route at this stage. What we do is spend some time with the children and talking through what their phobia may be. And our experience of the rollout so far has been actually most children just need to be advised and have some time with a healthcare professional talking through what the vaccination will do, how it will be administered. And so far, we've actually managed to vaccinate even though the most needle phobic individuals. And we have needle phobia in the adult setting too.
Absolutely. I mean, I think back to the time when I was a child, I was never really keen on needles. But now as a grown up, you become acclimatized to it, don't you? And you do take it on board, I suppose. General question, how do we know when children's vaccinations will take place? Perhaps Anna Blesser-Hassett, because you're in charge of public health within Sandwell. So how will the council administer that? And is that going to be administered in the same way by other local authorities?
So I can tell you about how Sandwell are planning it, and I think it is a similar way, although there might be minor differences between us and other local authorities. So nationally, the service called the School Age Immunisation Service are rolling out the vaccination programme for 12 to 15-year-olds. And they're a service, they're used to giving vaccinations such as the flu vaccine and HPV vaccine in schools. So they have that experience built up from previous years already. And how parents and children will find out about when their vaccine will be. So that will be communicated via the School Age Immunisation Service, usually in partnership with our own public health teams, so some of the public health team and the education department and the clinical commissioning group will write out to the school and they'll agree on a date for that vaccination clinic with the school. Then that will be communicated to the parents via, we're encouraging schools to communicate it in as many ways as possible, so that everybody is aware of increased uptake. So we're encouraging that message to go out via email, via text, and via any other meetings that might take place within that time period. The parents will also be sent a link to the e-consent form, which is the method that the School Age Immunisation Service is using for consent. So it's very important that the parents and the child have a discussion about whether they want the vaccination or not, and they go through that consent process before the date of the clinic in the school.
And that has to be a joint decision between the child and the parent, doesn't it, really? What happens where children are perhaps in local authority care for whatever reason? How does it stand then?
So again, everybody else, feel free to come in to give the other local authority.
Oh yeah, this is an open forum, so feel free.
But in Sandwell, so we're working with our education department, who have contact with children and families who don't attend a school setting. We've got a list of all those different settings. And what we're going to do is offer a local place during half term to invite all these children to. So we're going to send out some dates and times for, in a similar way to how we've done the pop-up clinics within the community before. We'll find a trusted setting that's easy to access. And invite those children along there via letter.
Lovely. If you have a question for the panel, you can get in touch with me via the website blackcountryradio.co.uk. Just click on the link and you can email your question to me here and I will read it out. Or you can text 63446, starting your text with the letters BCR, then leave a space, then put your question on and then put your name and the area that you're texting from. Text will cost you 10 pence plus your standard message charge, or you can use the Black Country Radio app to do it that way as well, and I'll try and get through as many of those as I can. Now, what happens if a child is off sick then, from a local authority perspective, and they miss the vaccine? What happens then, Anna?
For children that are off sick, or also children who have had COVID within the past 28 days prior to the date of the vaccination clinic, we'll be looking to advertise other settings, such as the one that I've spoken about before. So during half term, we plan to do two clinics at least in that week. And again, we're making a record of who those children are, but we plan to share those dates and times publicly and run what would be a walk-in clinic. So if a parent knows, for example, that their child has missed the date of the clinic in school, then they still have the second opportunity, and there will probably be further opportunities as well to bring them along after that date.
Dr. Abu Afan, you're head of adults and older people's public health within the clinical commissioning group, and adults have had a wide cross-section of side effects from the vaccines. I guess it's down to the type of vaccine that they've had and how their own body works. What kind of side effects are children likely to expect, if any? Because it's reasonable to suggest that their immune system should be a lot stronger.
The side effects of children, or the research showed us, it's mainly around the injection site, which is pain and a bit of redness and a bit of a swelling. And some children might get generalized pain, but it should resolve within 24 hours. As Dr. Kennedy mentioned, Pfizer has got the least side effects in children, and children should be just only given paracetamol, and within 24 hours, side effect should have resolved.
So in much the same way then as adults, really, just the same
exactly.
Sort of, you know, post-vaccine care, if you like. Should children still go to school if they're ill after the vaccine?
The advice is yes, if the illness is only pain at the injection site, but parents need to judge that. So if the child is just, if it's only pain around the injection site, they can go to school. They are not infectious. They are unlikely to pass COVID to anyone else. So it depends on if they are well enough to go to school, we advise them to go to school.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I've got, where are we? I've lost, Alicia Wakeman, good evening to you.
Good evening. I'm so sorry. My name's Jo. This is my daughter's.
Oh, that's all right. Jo, well, no, that's all right. Well, if you're probably like me, you'll answer to anything.
Absolutely.
Tell me about your involvement with the vaccine programme.
So I've been the nominated clinical lead from Dudley Group of Hospitals. So we've got a team that are going into each of the schools within Dudley. So we've got a set programme of schools that we're going into to vaccinate the 12 to 15-year-olds. So we've just completed our first school today. Feedback from the kids, I have to say, has been really positive. I spoke to 10 of the children this afternoon to say, what made you have the vaccine today? And the overwhelming response was, so I can go on holiday.
Yeah.
So really positive, very mature group of students and very well behaved, I have to say.
Now, Mark James has tweeted and Mark says, poison has killed over 1,600 and injured hundreds of thousands. I'm not quite sure what you mean, Mark. If you're referring to the vaccine isn't a poison. You know, Rookie, what do you think about that? How would you respond to Mark?
The vaccines have been launched with significant trial data to show that the vaccines are safe and they're incredibly effective. We can see already that the changes to our infection profile within the UK as a result of the vaccine rollout. The Medicines Healthcare Regulatory Agency, the MHRA, is very clear about reporting any type of incident as a result of anybody receiving the vaccines. And so each delivery model, whether that's in the school system or whether it's a hospital hub or a vaccination centre or a GP practice, all report via the yellow card reporting system or through their internal systems, which also collate the evidence around incidents as a result of the vaccination programme. We haven't seen any related issues that would lead us to any systematic poisoning at all. All of our staff that have been vaccinated have been managing to continue with their work, as have the general public. And our vaccination programme within the children's programme hasn't shown us any concern. We are, as an international community, have seen millions and millions of doses being given internationally. And again, no systematic issues reported there. We're all working as a united front in terms of the vaccination programme to ensure that we are able to protect ourselves, our families, our friends, and protect ourselves from very significant disease as a result of the COVID infection.
Now, I saw the television news last night, and they were saying that, I forget the percentage of adults now that have had both vaccinations, it's about 80-some-odd percent of the adult population. And if you look at the statistics now, the majority of COVID cases, not all of them, certainly, but the lion's share of them are either people who are unvaccinated, but primarily they're children and young people because they're more inclined to mix socially than the rest of us. So I think that's, if anybody needs convincing or any evidence, then very clearly there it is. You know, go and get your child vaccinated. It's as simple as that.
Absolutely. Most of the death actually happening as a result of COVID, it is among unvaccinated people. Mm-hmm. And hospital admission and admission to ICU is among either unvaccinated or people who received one vaccine. Children are transferring the infection to their parents and to the more vulnerable unvaccinated relatives in the family. This is why we really advise people to get the vaccine and get the two doses. And if they've been called for a booster, they take the booster as well.
And I mean, the thing, I've said this on these Q&A interviews I've done with you all before, that if people are thinking of going on holiday abroad to a country where they need to have some sort of jab, whether it's polio or tetanus or yellow fever or whatever, people wouldn't hesitate to do that because that means that they're going to be as safe as they possibly can be in that country. So I still fail to understand the hesitancy from people who don't wish to be vaccinated. But of course, it's their free choice, and it's also the choice of parents where their children are concerned. Susie Wood from Hales Owen has emailed. Thank you, Susie, for your email. She says, the JVCI don't seem convinced about children having the COVID jab, and I'm not sure if it's safe for my children to have it. I really don't know what to do and if it will impact on their future health. Who could answer that one for Susie, please?
Can I have a start? JCVI, Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunization, when they looked at the evidence of benefits versus risks, they found the benefit is higher, slightly higher than the risk. But they looked at it from a health point of view. So the chief medical officer looked at this in a wider, so he consulted with wider all the Royal Colleges and the education. And then when you take factors like continuation of education, not missing education, reducing the infection across the society, the benefits way out, are much higher than the risks, hence the advice. Also, it has been, the reason it is one injection only for healthy people because the risks is much lower in the first injection than the second injection. So the benefit of risks and benefits is in favor of benefits for healthy 12 to 15 to have one dose, okay, and the benefit of risk, balance of risks and benefit for clinically vulnerable 12 to 15 is to have two doses, okay, so it will be more beneficial to have two doses.
Lovely. And Dr. Kieran Kennedy, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
Yeah. I think it's a really good question, something to think about. And I would echo what Mayada just said. I think what's worth mentioning is that I think there's a bit of an underestimation of how unwell young people can get with COVID. A lot of people see it as something that affects older people. And by and large, older people do tend to get more unwell. But there are cases of young people who are 12 years old or 13 years old who are admitted to hospital, who are struggling to breathe, who might need to be ventilated, which can be really hard for them and their family. And beyond the acute infection, there's also issues with long COVID. So we have young people who, they might have not become that unwell with COVID, but months and months down the line, they're fatigued, they're tired, they can't get back to normal life. If they had the vaccine is a way that we can get people back to a sense of normality where we can bring people together again and try and get some more positives out of some of the hard and challenging times that we've had so far.
Leanne from Hales Owen has emailed. Thank you, Leanne. She says, I think parents will understandably be cautious where their children are concerned, and that goes for any medicine or vaccine. As a gesture of reassurance, if the panel members had children in that age group who showed an interest in vaccination, would they be fully supportive of that decision? So let's work around the panel. Joe, could you give me an answer for that, please?
Absolutely. So I've got three children, and all three have been vaccinated. They're slightly older, but as soon as the vaccine was available, all three of them, we sat down, had a conversation. So it was a joint decision, but obviously I'm very passionate about the benefits of that vaccine, particularly having older people in the family. So all of my children have had the vaccine.
Rookie, what are your thoughts?
Absolutely support that. I've got two children, and both were vaccinated when their call was when their call came. I also have nieces and nephews, and a family call on Zoom meeting was undertaken where we talked through the risks and benefits, and they are in that sort of school age program right now, and some are much older. And we felt it was really important that that the whole family discussed the vaccination program to be really clear about side effects, concerns, issues, talk through what the JCVI had advised. And I have to say that it's 100% within the Carlon family uptake. So I'm really, really proud of everybody's concerted efforts to have that taken and all undertaken within our local system as well.
Dr. Mayada, what do you think?
I echo Ricky's words. Yes, all our children are 100% vaccinated. One hasn't reached 12 yet, but we are just waiting when he reaches 12 and he will be vaccinated, absolutely.
What about you, Dr. Kieran?
So I don't have any children myself, but if I did have children, definitely. I think it'd be fantastic that they're interested in their health. They're taking concern about their health. They're curious about science, which I'm passionate about myself. So I'd have the discussion with them, go through the data with them, which is what I've been doing with college students in Dudley. We'd have a look at the data, would come up to a conclusion, and I'd let them make their own decision. But the data shows that it is safe and effective. So that is the decision I think that they would make.
And Anna Blennerhassett.
So I'm the same as Karen. I don't have any children, but I think I have the privilege of sitting in Sandwell Public Health Team, where I deal on a daily basis with outbreaks in schools. And I also cover mental health and children's mental health and work with people on my team who work on that. And those are the sort of wider side effects that Mayada touched upon, that I really want to see the children in Samwell get back to school, to go back to school and to stay back at school and to know that next week they can go in as well, and that that's going to be something like a consistent routine for them. And I think that would really help with their mental health and their wider mental well-being, in which we're seeing some problems at the moment. Yeah.
And of course, it's been proven that, you know, children are better off in school. They need their education. They can't keep being off school. You know, they've lost so much education over the last 18 months. And so, you know, it is important, as you quite rightly say, to get back to normality. Mike Nichols has emailed. Thank you, Mike, for your email. I think we may have covered this before, but I think Mike may have only just joined us. And he's asked, what side effects are my children likely to have? I've had the jab twice and felt ill for a few days afterwards. Well, so did I, Mike. I felt a bit rotten for 24 hours on the end of my first jab. Second jab, no problems at all. And I'm looking forward to having my booster around Christmas time when it's due. But for Mike, Dr. Abu Afan, what just remind us of the side effects, please.
As mentioned, the visor side effects are lower, one of the lowest side effects amongst all types of vaccines. The main side effects in children are at the injection site, which is pain, redness, and swelling. Some children might get muscle pain and feel a bit unwell, but it should subside within 24 hours and they can have paracetamol. You did ask about going to school. If they feel well enough, we recommend they go to school, especially if it's just pain at the injection site. And this is something their parents should judge in terms of getting them to school. But if they are if following vaccination, they are not infectious, they are unlikely to pass the infection to anyone.
Mark, thank you. Mark in Dudley says, I think it can be quite difficult for people to understand the need to vaccinate under 18s when the government message has constantly been that that age group are very unlikely to be ill if they can catch it. Is this primarily a way to prevent them from passing it on? Because surely if the vaccine just prevents serious illness, that's not going to help. Who could answer that one for Mark, please?
I don't mind answering that one.
Thank you, Kieran.
Okay, so as I mentioned previously, young people can get very unwell with the vaccine. So they can, with the infection. Young people get very unwell with the infection and they can get long COVID. So these are two things that are at the front of our mind. Beyond just feeling unwell, it's going to result in them having time away from their education, which is going to affect other parts of their lives. So the main reasons why we're doing this vaccination for young people is for the benefit of young people. It's to stop them getting very unwell and being admitted to hospital. It's to stop getting in the way of their education, of their life experiences, It's to get them back to normality with their family. There is the added benefit of making it less likely for their parents to get unwell from them, or their community members to get unwell from them. And there's the added benefit it can stop the spread of the infection around the community. But we're doing this for the children because it's important for their health and it's important for their education. But it's a really good question, and I'm glad he asked it.
Lovely. The next question from Ahmed Paves. Will there be a second jab for my children, or is there just one? I think we covered that earlier on, but Ruki Cullen, could you just confirm that, please?
Yes, of course. And I know that the messaging can be a little bit confusing, but it's only one dose for this cohort. The two-dose schedule is for adults and also for children who are we deem as clinically extremely vulnerable. So it's a single dose.
Lovely. Okay. I've something that's just come to mind, that if, for example, I was a foster carer, can I consent to the vaccine for the child or children that I care for? Where do we stand legally on that? That's a difficult one. Who could take that one for me?
I'm happy to answer that one. So
thank you.
I think, no problem. It's the decision of the child has a foster parent if they have been given what's called delegated authority or delegated decision making, and those permissions have been awarded to them by the council. Then they can make the decision as the person with parental. With that parental responsibility for the child. But if they're unsure whether they have that or not, they can always have just a chat with the child's social worker to discuss it and figure out who would be best to sign that consent form.
Lovely. Thank you. Adam in Wollaston has messaged via Facebook, which you can pop your questions on Facebook as well. He said, could you ask if the panel foresee that having an available vaccine will be mandatory one day? Where do we stand on the legalities of that? Perhaps, Joe, can you shed any light on that at all?
I think our colleagues from Public Health might be able to respond to that.
Okay, then perhaps Dr. Kieran then.
Yeah.
Thanks for the question. I don't see a universal mandate for vaccines for everyone in every demographic across the country as something that would be imminent. Something that would happen. I think what we're working on at the moment is we're helping people improve their own health. This is vaccine. It's people's choices. We're trying to empower them to improve their health and improve the health of their communities. And what we've seen from the vast majority of people is people are receptive to the vaccine. They want it. They want it to improve their health, to protect their family, and get back to the sense of normality. So with the great uptake of vaccines we're having across the country, I don't think something like that would be necessary. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing is working together with communities, with public health teams, with doctors, with nurses, with everyone all together to get the vaccination program going. And I think it's going well.
Yes, it sounds it, certainly. Let's go on to another question. This is from Sarah Preston. And again, these are all really good questions. Let's stick with you, Dr. Kennedy. Sarah says, if cases start to rise, will face masks and other restrictions return? And do you think we'll all be vaccinated every year or every 6 months, whatever our age? Thanks to Sarah in line. I mean, that's a difficult one because nobody has a crystal ball.
But as you said, no one has a crystal ball, but it's a really good question. It's definitely something worth to think about. In terms of close spaces now, sort of inside work environments, face masks are preferential. We would advise face masks because within teams, within workplaces, people can spread the virus. Even with vaccination, there is a small but still present chance of spreading the virus. So we would recommend face masks in closed spaces, especially places with poor ventilation. And we would encourage ventilating workplaces as much as possible. What we do know is that the more people we can get vaccinated, the more we can control the spread of the virus. We've seen from studies that having two doses of the vaccine gives you better prevention of infection and severe disease than one dose. And there's been a lot of promising evidence around booster doses in very critically unwell people. So what we know is if we carry on with the physical distancing, hand washing, wearing masks in poorly ventilated spaces, and carrying on with vaccinations, we can hopefully get much better control of the infection, and the cases will start to fall.
Shane in Stourbridge says, does the panel think after restrictions were lifted, compulsion for mask wearing dropped and large events were allowed to happen again, that the country is on track and not seeing anything too worrying? The message from government is confusing at best, and are we heading in the right direction? Anna Blesser-Hassett, please.
So I acknowledge that the guidance always changing has been confusing. I think it is due to a combination of factors, and that's looking at the evidence that comes out of trials. It's looking at the evidence that comes out of things like the vaccination program within our own country, and it's looking at what is happening with our COVID rates on a weekly or daily basis, and therefore the guidance changes depending on all of those things, which are always changing too. Can you just remind me what the second part of the question was again?
The second part of the question was, the message from government is confusing at best. Are we heading in the right direction?
Okay. So I think the reason that I'm most hopeful and the reason that I'm always proud to be part of the vaccination program is because, to me, that this is the tool that will help us get to the end of the pandemic. And we are so lucky that we have that now, and that it was developed by scientists and researchers on an incredibly rapid basis. And now, you know, the information is out there that it's on us, it's on us as public health teams and healthcare professionals, but it's also on us as communities to take up that offer of the vaccination. And I think that is the best thing that we can do, despite what might be going on around us or other messages that we might hear. We know that this is the one thing that we can really do to help us end the pandemic. So if things are getting a bit crazy or a bit confusing, just concentrate on that fact and encouraging your friends and family to do the same.
Let's go to a question from Sunita Cummings from Howley Grange. She says, my kids are under 12. Are they likely to be offered the vaccination in coming months to avoid the spread through schools? Dr. Abu Afan, could you answer that one for me, please?
The answer is no. It's only 12 or more so far. Because of the studies, it's done on this age group. But if the evidence changes, it might happen. But for the here and now, the answer is no. They have to turn 12 to be offered the vaccine.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to throw this one open to any of you now. Mary and Jim in Pleck. And hello to Mary and Jim. Thank you for your email. They say, I know the panel might not be able to answer conclusively, but are we seeing a light at the end of the tunnel in the Black Country? I know the restrictions are easing, but we need to get to a point, will we need to get to a point where this is an annual jab and life will be as normal? That kind of follows on from the previous question, but who could offer some wise words of wisdom to Mary and Jim, please?
Can I start?
Of course.
Happy to start.
Thank you.
The answer is yes, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Now we are preparing ourselves and the population to live or to learn to live with COVID. There are studies now going on to determine how frequently we would need the vaccine. Is it going to be annually or every 6 months? We will get to know that. So I think in the future is going to be part of similar to the flu vaccine. And similar to the flu, to like hand washing is very important to protect you from the flu, and it's social distancing as well. So perhaps these are the things we need to take on with us long term, in terms of the hand hygiene, respiratory hygiene. When we cough, we use a tissue or and cover our nose and our mouth. Yeah.
You see, but, sorry, go on.
Yeah, but I just wanted to say there is the vaccine plus respiratory hygiene plus hand washing, similar to prevention of any other disease like COVID, like flu, or like the gastro intestinal diseases as well, diarrhea and vomiting.
Now, you see, when I was little, I was brought up by my parents to, when I come back from anywhere in a public place, whether it was school, out with friends, whatever, you wash your hands as soon as you get in the house, because if you pretend that COVID didn't exist, and my goodness me, wouldn't we like to do that? There are all sorts, as you just quite rightly said, all sorts of bugs and diseases that are out there that are airborne, that are on surfaces. And if you use public toilets or, you know, well, any toilet really, you should always wash your hands afterwards. But the amount of times I use a public toilet and I see people not washing their hands, and I find that absolutely extraordinary.
I totally agree. Hand washing is one of the most effective public health interventions. And as you mentioned, not just COVID or respiratory disease, many, many other diseases, diarrhea and vomiting, winter bugs, you name it. And so I totally agree. You need to wash your hands after using the toilets and after coming in from outside, inside the house, before each meal, and of course, after each meal. So these are the things we need to pay attention to.
Thank you. Parvez has emailed, and Parvez is in Dudley, and they say, it seems an odd question, but do you think constant bombardment with figures, specifically death figures from the media, is helpful? I'm led to believe that death figures from other diseases could be regularly higher, but throwing those numbers out shifts focus purely on one virus and creates a moral panic. And of course, that's what we don't want to do, create a moral panic. But I think Parvez has a point that it seems that seems to have been the case. What are your collective thoughts, please? And I don't mind who starts that one first.
When we present death from COVID, it's presented against the expected or against the baseline. It's not presented. And also we usually present expected death at that point in time. For example, we know death increases during winter, so it's usually against a background. And I think it could be it is important to get the realistic, to be realistic and transparent about the impact of the disease on the population. It's not an easy thing, yes, to hear about death and or to be bombarded by death statistics, but I still feel, and this is just personal opinion, I think it is important to give people the truth about the impact of this disease.
That's right, because if we're honest, I mean, I'm afraid it does give people a bit of a culture shock and a reality check, but I'm afraid it is how it is, as I know it's a much maligned phrase, but people do need to understand the truth.
For example, now we are saying the death rate is much lower now because of the vaccination compared to before the vaccine, when we had the same rates of infection. So you look at it in both ways, so that it supports now the death statistics support the argument for the vaccine.
Lovely.
Or the case for the vaccine.
I'm going to try and squeeze two more questions in because we're rapidly running out of time. Mark Reynolds, who is 69, I hope Mark won't mind me saying that. Mark's in Wolliscote. And he says, cases are rising in Dudley, nearly the highest across the Midlands at 425 per 100,000. How worried should we be? And will the annulment make things worse? I think there's a slight typo in your message there, Mark, but you know, okay. So there's 425 per 100,000. Dr. Kieran, should we be concerned about that?
So with an upward trend, we definitely need to keep that in mind, and it needs to make us sort of think about what are we doing in terms of our own hygiene practices. Are we washing our hands? Are we wearing face masks? Are we taking the opportunities to physically distance where we can in the workspaces and seeing others? I think we need to monitor the figures closely and do the personal things we can do, washing hands, wearing masks, physically distancing, try and keep rates down. Where possible, not socializing with lots of different groups during the same day, as things like this can increase infection rate. But we're working on the vaccination campaign, and the more people we get vaccinated, the better we can control these rates. So the figures are there because we want to be transparent, because people deserve to know what's going on around them, and show that we are monitoring things and we are working on the vaccine campaign, and we're going to carry on doing this because that's what is the best for our community.
And also, we are advising people to take tests, the COVID tests, lateral flow testing. If they don't have any symptoms, they can pick that from their nearest pharmacy, and the PCR test if they have any symptoms, because getting early diagnosis and self-isolate will reduce the chance of you passing the infection to other people.
Lovely. Okay. One final question from Nina in Lye, and I'm going to ask you to answer this in about a couple of minutes. Just to settle an argument that we're having. Oh, it's going on in Nina's house then. She says, if everyone in the country or the world was vaccinated, would the virus effectively be gone? If you think about it, when the country was vaccinated against polio, the disease disappeared eventually. Could that happen with COVID? I think that's a big ask. And who could answer that one for me, please?
It could happen, provided the virus is not going to mutate and get new shapes. But at the same time, the vaccine has a capacity to, there is a capacity to change the vaccine as well. Yes, so the answer is absolutely, it could happen, similar to, as you said, polio and other diseases who were declared abolished from humanity.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this is kind of similar to a question I've just had from Terry Brown. I'm going to squeeze Terry in. Terry says, when will this end? Do you see a time when we are COVID-free, or we will have to live with this? Rookie, I haven't heard from you for a bit. What do you think about that? What's your thoughts?
My personal thoughts are, I look back over the last 18 months to when we were completely locked down and isolated to where we are now, where we are meeting with our grandparents. So there is a definite light at the end of the tunnel. We are meeting, children are being vaccinated and being reunited with their grandparents and so forth. So I think there is a definite move towards living with COVID. And the more that we undertake vaccination, the more we send out the public messages around infection prevention, so hands, face and space, if we continue with all of those public messages, we will start to learn with this infection, as we do with many other infections, and I think that's I think those are the key things that we, all of us, have personal control over. So I really like the fact that I'm now back with my family and can spend time with my family, but I do this with caution. I do this because I want to make sure that I can continue seeing my family as much as I need to, and ensuring that, you know, the safety around all my family is paramount to me. So I would thoroughly encourage anybody that's still in two minds about vaccination to give that consideration. Look at where we were March 2020 and look at where we are now.
And Anna, there's clearly no room for complacency here, is there?
No, there's not. I mean, our team would love it if everybody, you know, in the Black Country could respond to the efforts and really the massive, massive effort, energy, resources, capacity, time that is going in right now to organise the vaccination clinics that we do have ongoing on a daily basis, and also the vaccination clinics that we are setting up in schools, because we have, you know, everybody from teachers, headmasters at schools, the public health team, in St. Miles and Wellness Birmingham Hospital Trust, the GPs. We are all working as hard as we can to make this happen, and we would absolutely love it if we could see our efforts sort of matched by the uptick in terms of vaccination. So please come and get your...
Well, that fits nicely into my next question. We're rapidly, as I say, running out of time. I've got about 4 minutes left or thereabouts. It's time for those parting words where I give each of you 30 seconds to sum things up and give a parting word of inspiration and encouragement. And as Anna, you're in the frame at the moment, could you give me in 30 seconds why should we get our children vaccinated?
Children say that they want their lives to get back to normal. So that's, based on listening to them, that's why we should get our children vaccinated.
Dr. Abu Afan.
Vaccine is safe and it can save life and prevent interruption of education. So get vaccinated.
Rookie Cullen, Chief Pharmacist.
Absolutely. We want to echo Maada's view on the fact that the vaccines are safe and effective. They've been massively trialled. We've been injecting millions of patients with absolute confidence, and the NHS has really absolutely stepped up to the plate, as all of its partners. So let's all collaborate and make sure that we protect each other. Isn't it great that our families can meet again? So for me, that is the most important thing, being able to be with my family.
And I think by everybody pulling together and doing that, that's partly why we are where we are now, because, the lion's share of people have been sensible about it. Dr. Kieran Kennedy, your parting words, please.
Yeah, I agree with everyone else. The vaccine's safe. It's going to protect our kids and it's going to give them a bit of more normality to their life. It's going to let them go back to school, see their friends, spend time with their loved ones and really enjoy their lives. And I think that's a really important thing after all the difficult times we've had with COVID.
Thank you. And finally, Joe, please.
Thank you. I think for me personally, my children are the most precious things in the world. I want them to be safe and I want them to continue to have a relationship with the older people in my family. So if the take-home message from here is please, please get vaccinated. This is the key to unlocking our future.
We have run out of time, and that's a good note to end it on. Joe Wakeman, Rookie Kallon, Chief Pharmacist, Dr. Maada Abu Afan, Head of Adult and Older People's Public Health, Dr. Kieran Kennedy from the Public Health Registrar, and Anna Blenner Hassett from Public Health in Sandwell. Thank you all ever so much for your time, and hopefully we've managed to get some answers to those annoying questions that people have. And the key thing is, get your children vaccinated.